asking you to listen to us. Says, yes, we go to listen, but not go, I want to leave the power. And it's so much easier just to cross with. Is it possible to ask you to assist us in this direction and maybe send us back on Monday to us email? Can't that be? I'm sure we'd all appreciate that. The other thing is, I know Ms. Tierko said she went to Labour, but as a matter of fact, she said she'd been here for about an hour, and it would be a very good idea if she could come back to the committee if they got their quorum, you know, not parking decisions.
Yeah, but she, the meeting was starting at half past nine. So I'm saying she's here in an hour, so I'm just jogging her memory.
Those things must be done. But what I also saw yet is that the Home Affairs is not taken as one of the stakeholders. I think one health defense agreement, you need an issue of the people and who, whatever. So why is the Home Affairs not one of the key stakeholders which is identified here? Home Affairs, from the report here, is not one of the key stakeholders which is identified. We work up our own committees. And then, as I said, the chair, in 1963, Bamukuma was very clear. We need to free ourselves from the shackles of colonialism. The only way to do that is to trade among ourselves, industrialize or beneficiate our products so that we can be able to advance. So I think that we go head over here with this agreement to agree with the African Union.
Thank you, Honorable David.
Thank you, Chairman. In view of the importance of this and the importance of not becoming an exceeding member, and given the benefits which you outlined and overall importance of inter-African trade and our preeminent role within this, I'm interested as to why we haven't actually taken the lead on this. And why we've allowed ourselves to be put to the post by 7 relative minerals in Africa, and now we're just entering it, making sure that we get in at the end of January for the President to ratify this. And what if that, as these things happen, what if that trip is postponed or it doesn't materialize? We've been tardy in this regard, and I'd like to know why. Surely it's in our interest to have been preeminent and proactive. I mean, this seems to be lastminute.com stuff on a very important issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kacharya. Is there anyone else? Honorable Nasser.
Thank you. With respect to the agreement, I think that the real success or failure in the agreement, particularly for South Africa, is going to deal with the various annexures, particularly those on rules of origin, which we know continuously are abused, the customs cooperation, the non-tariff barriers, and we know that these are becoming abused more and more in global economies to try and slow down the importation of goods that Africa does it, whether they admit to it or not. And technical barriers to trade.
Sorry, I just missed that due to some walking. Just repeat that again. Sorry, Honourable Minister.
The gentleman who wrote it.
The
non-tariff barriers, which South Africa does use, whether they admit to it or not. Sanitary and phytosanitary measures are critically important. And in fact, GATT is hopelessly behind when it comes to the ability to enforce those. In fact, give guarantees. We know this is one of the continual sticking points in the European Union and with GOA and with respect to transit and the movement of goods. So if one was to look at South Africa's ability to participate in many of these protocols on trade, we don't fare very well. In fact, we are lagging behind on many of those protocols. And so the problem for you is that many of these functions are outsourced to other departments, whether it's the DAP, whether it's the SARS, and you have no control or ability to enforce those protocols. And therein lies the biggest problem for South Africa, in that many people will be able to take advantage of South Africa's participation in the free trade agreement. Now, I've highlighted this in the discussions around the TFTA, and I'm still no closer to getting to understand how is the DPI taking a role in ensuring that these protocols will be observed and there to protect South Africa's interests against illicit import of goods. When it comes to the protocols on the dispute settlement, Now, I do find it somewhat strange that we are relying on a dispute settlement mechanism that is outside of the courts, but yet our very own Investment Act speaks to dispute settlement within the courts before such time as one is able to seek dispute in a body. How do you square that circle just try and explain to me how, let's use the example of Egypt or Nigeria. A company has a dispute in South Africa. Are they allowed to go to this dispute body first? Do they have to exhaust all of the internal remedies as stipulated by the Investments Act? Which, just explain to me, if a dispute was declared, how that would relate to and how that would align with the Investments Act. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honourable
Minister, for being on
this. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions and the comments. I think the first point that Honourable Khadija made about India, I apologise if I misspoke. The point I was trying to make is that the ingredients for growth are similar. The tools that we need for growth are similar, but I will speak clearer on that next time. So apologies for having created that confusion there. The dispute settlement. We looked at the existing model of the WTO and we tried to improve it. There is a dispute settlement body that will, where there's a dispute, that will establish a panel. So you, as a country, and similar to Protection of Investment Act, it's state-to-state litigation. So as a country, you initiate your claim, and you make your legal arguments. If you do not prevail, if you lose, you have the possibility to appeal to a higher level, an appellate body which will comprise independent experts. We've tried to make it similar to how our courts will function, the right to review and appeal and so on, but to make it also more efficient. Because you are talking about agricultural products, for example. So you can't have a dispute that is going on and on when agricultural products are sitting on the border.
Yeah.
So we have built into the mechanism that efficiency system. And if I may respond also to the question, which I think is linked to dispute settlement. In the Protection of Investment Act, yes, it is correct that there is a requirement to exhaust local remedies. There is no such requirement under international trade law. So, for example, if a South African company has a dispute or wishes to lodge a dispute with a company in the US, there's no requirement under WTO law that you go and you, or even under our law, that you exhaust local remedies first. So investment disputes have been treated as a different class under WTO law. There is no requirement for exhaustion of local remedies. The point, I think, is valid in the sense that when we get to negotiate the investment charter, we will have to, as I said earlier, we will have to make sure that there are no inconsistencies between the Protection of Investment Act and what will eventually be binding obligations on investment protection under this agreement. So the simple answer to the question is that investment arbitration and trade law litigation have been treated completely different under international law, hence the absence of the requirement for, you will not find it, I believe, under any agreement in the WTO where there's a requirement for exhaustion of local remedies. Now, it may very well be that some FTAs, and I'm not aware of any free trade area where there is a requirement for exhaustion of local remedies first. I don't know if it exists. Typically, what exists is that the free trade agreement itself will create a dispute settlement body, and that dispute settlement body will function along the lines that I have outlined. So that is the answer to the question around investment arbitration vis-à-vis trade law litigation. I think the issue of the various protocols, SPS and so on, is going to be an ongoing challenge, because after we negotiate the agreement, I think the Honourable Member is correct, it then, where there is a dispute that arises or a trade concern that arises, let's say under the SPS annex or pursuant to the SPS annex, it would then be the Department of Agriculture that is the first point of call in terms of resolving that issue. But of course, we have to work together with the relevant department. So that will be an ongoing coordination issue that we will have to continuously be vigilant. But it's not possible for the DTI alone to, first of all, we don't have all the expertise on FPS issues, for example. On rules of origin, we rely on SARS. So where SARS picks up that there are transgressions of rules of origin, they have the capacity to deal with it, but they also would have to notify us so that we can address that concern pursuant to the agreement itself. The Honourable Kacharya made a point that about why we are not one of the first or the second country to ratify, and why we have not moved quickly enough. The person asked a similar question about why we have not moved quicker, and the explanation is this: that after the agreement was signed by other heads of state in March this year, we had to take we concluded the negotiations on the 15th of March. Other heads of state were signing on the 21st of March. We did not have time to put the documents through the normal constitutional process as outlined in section 231. Of the Constitution. So we had to go through the process of requesting DECO and the Department of Justice to review the documents, to issue legal opinions, and to satisfy themselves that the agreements are consistent with our international obligations and so on. So we only received the approval for the president to sign in late June. So that is why the president was not able to move quicker with signature in March, because we had to follow that process of section 231, read with the manual of executive acts, which also sets out what has to happen. So it was a question of very, very narrow time frames that we had to follow that strict process. And that said, we are hoping that the President will sign, will be able to deposit the instrument in January. But the main thing is, of course, to make sure that we do everything in a legally procedural way, so that there are no challenges to procedure that we followed. But I think we are very much aware, Honourable, I can assure you, we are very much aware of the importance of us, South Africa, moving quickly on this. The other countries, I am not sure why or how they were able to move quicker than us. What I can say about Eswatini is that partly they moved very quickly because they had expressed interest to host the secretariat of this agreement, so as has Ghana. And so perhaps there is a also there was that consideration there, but that's under speculation. That's speculation on my part. With regard to Home Affairs, Madam Chair, at this point there had not been an issue, a specific issue that would have required Home Affairs direct involvement at this stage. We do envisage that when we get to, there are discussions about the movement of business vessels, which at this stage is not part of our negotiations, but there are proposals that it should be, that the movement of business vessels should be part of the process. So at that point then, we, like we did in the tripartite, they will then take the lead on that issue. When we commence, so that's the first point about Home Affairs. The second point is that when we commence negotiating a specific commitment in trade and services, there is a part that deals with movement of professionals, but under the framework of trade law and not under the framework of immigration law. We will consult with them also on that issue, which is related to services. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. May I also hand Honourable MacPherson?
Thanks. I just want to understand with respect to the investment chapter, when is that going to be discussed or negotiated? Because I mean, when do we get started that if we're approving this agreement? The next question I want to ask is there a coordinating body that is then going to be set up within the DTI to deal with the protocols on trade and goods with respect to the annexure? Because you know, to be perfectly frank, you know, SARS is simply not able to deal with rules of origin at the moment. I mean, there is goods, transshipped goods that are streaming into the country every single day, misrepresenting where they're coming from. And SARS is not able to handle that. And now we're going to open the market to, you know, another 40 states in Africa to potentially do exactly the same. So my faith in customs to be able to adequately understand what the true rules of origin are for those goods is next to zero. So you know, while we support in principle the idea of this free trade agreement, these things in time can actually be detrimental to South Africa's economy. And there is no reason why people don't want to take advantage of South Africa or of access into South Africa's economy. And those are the inherent risks which must be adequately dealt with and not just outsourced to other people in the hope that they will get it right. Because up to this point they have not got it right.
Thank you,
Honourable
MacPherson. Members, I'm sure all of you can hear a lot better than I can, although I'm sure my hearing is excellent. But I'm finding it difficult to hear at the moment because there's so much talking. Was there another hand? Honourable Bianchi.
Yes. Chair, I think mine was just to acknowledge because I just said that they are dealing with the issue of dumping. And we had a crisis yesterday with sugar dumping, the department is dealing with that. And you also, I have a proposal that you consider the ratification of that. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much. You mentioned, Mr. Mene, that the some overseas agencies of the United Nations or what the economic development was for Africa that identified a number of pluses that this could have for Africa. But having said that, they also indicated the importance of having the schedules prepared in terms of the commitment of certain goods, etc., etc. Also, having said that, there was the whole issue of this is a great opportunity, but as I read that, those comments now, and also heard what you said, it sounds to me as if the African Continental Free Trade Agreement was in the nature of a key. And that key would now unlock this door. But beyond that door, a number of things have to be addressed in this door. Now, one of them would be in South Africa. We have recognized the importance of developing our productive industrialization and investment. My question would be, and it shows that there is a greater need for us to engage with our brothers and sisters in Africa. How ready is the rest of Africa to do that, one? Two, it has also been recognized in our various engagements throughout the region and with other agencies, commercial, etc., that the infrastructure in Africa is a very serious impediment. How do we overcome this? Of course, Europe has managed to overcome it, but it has had centuries and centuries to do that. In terms of the regionalization of Africa and the recognition for the importance of infrastructure, this has only been recognized for the last 30 years, and infrastructure putting across up to now has been a very challenging issue. So the third thing is the standards, which have been raised in some ways. Here, the Honourable MacPherson referred to his concern with the capacity of SARS to deal with this. But even if SARS, and when SARS has this capacity, and we must accept there was a point in time when SARS did have that capacity and did deal with it. Unfortunately, and I really have no time to go down that road, it's lost a lot of that capacity. But even when it has the capacity, the challenge is we have certain standards for our products. And we have these standards because of our external trading partners outside of the region who insist on X and Y. Now, how soon do you think it's going to take us, even working as we are working, I understand, closely together with our brothers and sisters, to try to harmonize these standards so that it doesn't impact negatively on another country? And then again, you referred to this transshipment of, origin of sorts. Rules of origin, and you made a reference yourself to sugar. Very recently we've had sugar here. And we know that around South Africa, our neighbours also farm sugar and are very keen to sell it, etc. Now, what I'm worried about, and it certainly doesn't sound like we have anything to worry about from our neighbours, but rather those across the ocean. But I'm just saying that if, when you talk of transshipment for my benefit, what are you really referring to here in relation to the rule of origin? And perhaps let's talk sugar just for a moment in time there. Because in addition to that, you added, and then it must be significant value addition, you know, as it leads to. Just unpack that a little bit for myself. But I must say that, you know, it is imperative that we move forward on this regional agreement, the continental one, and try to put in, I suppose you could call it different clauses, dispensations, for some of our neighbours who may not be up to a particular speed and level. And what would you suggest they are? So we wouldn't want to obviously cut anyone out. We want to trade. So if somebody's product is not up to this level, how are we going to address that? Or are you saying that that matter is still on the table? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. The investment chapter, we will start that negotiation in January next year. And you will see in the main agreement, in the agreement establishing the AFCFTA, there is a provision there, I think it's Article 8 or 9, there is a provision there that says that phase two shall comprise these areas, investment, competition, and intellectual property rights, and that upon conclusion of negotiating on those issues, they will then become an integral part of the agreement. So we will have to come back. We are going to come back to have to table that agreement when it is concluded. We have to, as a matter of law, we have to do that as a matter of law, a legal requirement. And as I said earlier, our single objective will be to make sure that the investment chapter of this agreement is not in any way inconsistent with the protection of investment rights. And then at the same time, that it does provide us with new protections where we currently do not have investment protections with our trading partners in Africa. Regarding the coordination of body in the DTI, well, this is something that I would be happy to take up with the DG, because it has of course financial and budget constraints, so the DG will have to consider that matter. I'm not sure that it is something that we will be able to respond to immediately, the issue of improving DTI's capacity to implement and coordinate across the various areas in the annexes. Yes, I confirm that there are provisions on anti-dumping, subsidies to prevent countries trading to us who are using funds, subsidies and countervailing measures, safeguards, and those are based on our existing law, which is we know is in existence and is implemented by ITEC. Yes, Madam Chair, these are the real challenges about how the benefits of this country, of this agreement from a productive point of view. For now, the countries that are more industrialized will be the immediate beneficiaries. So the countries that have a higher level of industrialization and manufacturing based and productive capacity will be the immediate beneficiaries. But we have to do more, as has been set out in the Boosting Intra-Africa Action Plan. So the African Union has come up with specific programs to address supply-side constraints of African countries and to ensure that that we, even without the FTA, that we rely less on commodities as primary commodities as export products that generate customs revenue for us. So there are initiatives that are being undertaken by the by Afreximbank Bank, which has set aside a substantial amount of money to boost intra-Africa trade from an industrial sector point of view. And also the African Development Bank has specific programs on boosting intra-Africa trade. Now, the Afreximbank and the African Development Bank, before this agreement was signed, were doing these things independently. But now they will be anchored under the agreement. So there will be a coherence of the objectives to industrialize, objectives for infrastructure development. As I said, in June, the Afreximbank announced a substantial amount of money that has been put aside to improve Africa's productive capacity for those countries who are not yet able to, who don't yet have a viable industrial base. And that applies also to infrastructure. On value addition, I think it's very important that we are honest with our trading partners, and we have been. We have told them that we have specific industries that that will require protection, a measure of protection. Specifically, we mentioned sugar, and we said that we are not saying that sugar cannot come in from India or Brazil, but it cannot come in on preferential rates, on SADC rates, on SAC rates. So the flow of sugar will continue because we can't stop it.
Yeah.
But they are not going to get preferential treatment because that is where the displacement happens.
Yeah.
Is when you give them the same. So that is where we have also been very clear with them. So it is sugar, it is edible oils, there's a number of sensitive products where we are not going to agree because they are sensitive. Products, we are not going to agree to that they be granted a preference under this agreement. We made the example in the last meeting, Madam Chair, on sugar. We said, for example, we want to see productive capacity of sugar in Africa. So we want to see more sugar refining happening in Africa. Than sugar, raw sugar coming, you know. I think that it will be a debate that will have to continue in the negotiations because we have not yet concluded on this issue of rules of origin. But the idea is that we must use rules of origin to foster industrialization. So we have to make sure that we refine the sugar here within the region under the AFCFTA, not to allow refined sugar to come in from a third party to come in at a preferential rate, because that is where the market distortion happens. And this will apply to other products too, to automobiles, as I said, to oils, you know. These are the products where we expect to see a very high level of value addition to prevent, amongst other things, the transshipment. The harmonization of these standards, what we have agreed thus far, Madam Chair, are what we call the technical barriers to trade. And what it does, what the technical barriers to trade annex does, is to set out standards for products that are coming into each other's countries. It is based on the WTO, the WTO TBT agreement. This bottle of water, for example, if you look at the back, you will see that there are technical barriers, there are standards that it has to meet. otherwise it will not be allowed into the South African market. So we have agreed on the technical standards. The problem will be, the challenge will be at implementation. That is where we will have to make sure that the implementation of the standards does happen. And the point that I think was being made earlier, that we ourselves, we protect our market from receiving substandard goods that do not meet the requirements that are in the agreement. We will have to make sure that we reject those products at the border before they enter the South African market.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khadebe.
Certain, I think that the explanation you received is very good and highly appreciated. But what I'm worried with here is that you can see that the implementation is going to start. So in taking this thing forward, the certification forward, what is going to be the role of the Protocol Committee of Finance in particular? Because I think that here we agree that this is a good agreement. We are taking it forward, but then the implementation part is going to be solved on the other side. What is going to be the role? I want it from the Secretariat as well. How do we take this thing forward as quickly as possible?
You know, one of the things we raised and referred to at the beginning of the meeting, and the apology is that we were in a joint meeting. We can't turn back the clock. We can only try and make swifter progress and overcome that. But I don't know, Mr. Mene, if your intention is to at least brief finance, and I'm sure it is, but given that the reference has been made by the Honourable Khadebe that implementation will be so important. And looking this up here and there on the internet, this has come out as one of the very important issues, the training of those who will be implementing this. But that will need to begin now that we are capacitated. But on the other hand, what you have shared with us, for me, it offers the best hope I've learned for Africa. Because, you know, we're all trying to promote entrepreneurship, productive industrialization. And here you're going to perhaps be having and encouraging businesses. The opportunity will be there for them to expand our market, as very few other interventions have done as a whole in Africa. It will be the day of the entrepreneur, the innovator, etc. And this would provide a legal framework or architecture for this to happen. So while, yes, there are going to be, serious teething problems, I think that this committee will try and set aside time again in the early new year just to see where we are, what's happened. And in our legacy document, we will encourage the new committee, the term that committee comes in, a new term of parliament, to have an engagement with yourself 3 times a year with the trade coming in. What's happening here? Where is it going to monitor the actual rollout and implementation of it? But I was just looking at, I'm not sure if it was in your PowerPoint or the other one, where it indicated that the trade in India or intra-Asian trade was 50% or something like that. And then you went up to the intra-North American trade, going up to like 52%. And in Africa, we were way down at somewhere in the 18%. And, you know, I'm sure if we look back at what informed those figures and the background, we will learn they also started off like this. When you go back in your own history and you look at the development of the European Union, first an economic trading bloc, SACU, etc. There were many, many challenges they faced. And that was notwithstanding that their geographical area is so much smaller than the African continent. And a lot of their infrastructure was already there, going back to Roman times. So I do believe that we should contextualize this with that historical understanding that Europe development started with the Romans more than 20 centuries ago. So I really want to persuade all members of our committee. I think all members would like to see this going ahead, but you have certain reservations. Because I'm looking at yourself, Honourable MacPherson, as a senior person of the DA here, that, you know, you've raised concerns, very legitimate concerns. But I think these are concerns that we will have to face head on. And this committee could begin to play a role with SARS in getting this done. One of the things, though, I didn't effectively understand, I was not aware we had any non-tariff barriers, although you may be referring to the National Regulator Compulsory Services, but unfortunately you were not here the other day when, I don't know, Tuesday or last week, when we went over some of the information. Some of the information we received made us very unhappy. But one of the pieces of good news, which you have been on and on about, and quite rightly, has been letters of authority and backlogs. That has really been cut down. And what hasn't been cut down and made more compatible are the ICT systems. So I would really enjoying you to just check that report and also bring yourself up to date. There's positives in that and negatives. But for yourself, Mr. Menez, I want to thank you very much for bringing us up to date on this. And now, members, for the more serious aspect, we are required to agreements come here. And it is upon our, you know, agreement that we take this to the House, that it goes to the House for ratification. We're not ratifying it here in this committee, but it is a serious point. The report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry on the agreement establishing the African Continental Free Trade Agreement dated 11th October 2018. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having considered the request for approval by Parliament on the agreement establishing the African Continental Free Trade Area, recommends that the House, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Now, it's now put two members before that. Honourable Kajeli.
Chairperson, I move that the Portfolio Committee agrees that this agreement be taken to the House for adoption.
Can I please have a seconder? Honourable Williams. And I think the process has to be very formal. Are there any objections? Are there any abstentions? Right. Well, Mr. Herman, this can then go forward to the House to be ratified. May I also just point out that I shall certainly say in the House, we ourselves could have brought it sooner. Could have brought it in September or August. September. But that we some of the glitches in parliamentary programming precluded this, and then that was a joint meeting. And I think we need to take these agreements much more seriously than we have been. Right. thank you once again, Mr. Manning, but I believe you're still with us, am I right? You're just sort of adjusting your thinking. All right, members, look, we're not suffering from a lack of air here. We're all wide awake. All right. Fine. I would just like to ask the Honourable Debbie just to take over for 2 minutes. My husband's been trying to say goodbye to me for a long time. Thank you. You know, he's climbing on plane, right? So please can you take the chair?
To amend
there's a protocol in the same way that South Africa would have had legal difficulty if we had maintained protection of Investment Act through those existing bits, whilst we had a finance and investment protocol which did not make provision, for example, for investor-state dispute. So these are some of the amendments that were undertaken. The definition of investment, the definition of investor, in Article 2.3 in the amendment agreement, there's a removal of prohibition on notification of terms, conditions, and benefits agreed to on admission of investment. Article 5, compensation related to expropriation shall be fair and equitable instead of prompt and effective, and more detail provided on how to determine fair and equitable compensation. Further, Article 6 accords investors national treatment instead of most favored nation treatment. Again, this is consistent with South Africa's Protection of Investment Act. And preferential treatment can be accorded to national investments. The right to regulate, which was previously linked to health, safety, and environmental concerns, the new version separates these from the right to regulate for developmental purposes. The new version also makes provision for the settlement of state-to-state disputes in line with the protocol, the SADC protocol, which established the SADC tribunal. There is no reference to international arbitration. Now, by way of concluding, other countries are not having to ratify this amendment. For them, signature by their minister of the amended agreement is sufficient for their legal purposes under their own domestic laws. But for South Africa, we have to, the legal opinion we received is that the amendment, because it is substantive, when you read it against Article Section 231, it is considered to be a substantial amendment and therefore has to be ratified. There are 11 other countries that are signatories to the fifth, and 10 have signed the amendment, and we signed it in August 2016. The amendment came into force on August 24th, 2017, and that is after the 8 members deposited their instrument of ratification. And as I just said, the amendment to the protocol is required to be ratified by Parliament in line with Section 232 of the Constitution. Our view and the legal opinion of DECO is, the state law advisors is that justice is that the amendment to the protocol is in conformity with the Protection of Investment Act. And that was our goal. Of course, other countries had their own objectives, but our objective was to make sure that that we don't have different obligations under the SADC Finance and Investment Protocol as we do under our own domestic law. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you for this presentation. Are there any issues which are coming from the members around that? Because this is not a new file whatever, but it's only an annex which we dealt with. I think that the explanation is sufficient. Is there any, I'm just going to have to say, is there any issue coming from the members? It's 1, 2, 3 out. So, to the secretary, what must happen now? The secretary says that the report must, I must read the report so that you agree with it or reject it. according to the report, of the Sotolo Committee on Trade and Import Agreement amended in Annex 1, Cooperation of Investment of the Southern African Development Community Protocol on Finance and Investment dated 11 October 2018. The Sotolo Committee on Trade and Import having considered the request for the approval by Parliamentary Agreement amending Annex 1 of the Southern Protocol on Finance and Investment that the House in terms of Section 231, Subsection 2 of the Constitution approved the said agreement. That's the report. Is there any proposal for this report to be adopted? Honorable Williams?
Chairperson, I move that we adopt the report, thank you, and the agreement.
Thank you. Is there any second for that?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Is there any dissenting voice against the motion?
None.
So the report is accordingly agreed to. Thank you, Chairperson. I will pass.
Right now, we have a slight challenge in the sense that we're not late to move on to the next item because the technical team needs it until at least half past one. So all we can do is to bring forward the lunch break. So we can say, well, it's now 11:45, so we actually can't get on with work, that's our problem. And simply adjourn now at 11:45 and return at, return, we would have started lunch at 12:30, that's when it opens. And we will return here at 1:30. Please, is that agreed?
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.